Hello and welcome to the Scholar Circle, scholarcircle.org. I'm Maria Armudian. In this hour, inflation dominates the news in the United States. But what is the traditional media getting wrong about the story? And how permanent are these price increases? Doug Becker explores.
I'm Doug Becker. It's the economy, stupid. James Carville stated that in the 1992 election, and it's constantly repeated in every electoral cycle. But since the pandemic, the US has faced challenges of a recovery of the economy that was largely shut down for medical reasons. This has resulted in issues such as supply chain disruptions and what's being reported as high rates of inflation. On today's show, we're going to explore inflation as an economic issue being reported in the United States and how it relates to the pandemic, to labor shortages, to economic recovery, and other issues. Our guest today is Dean Baker, senior economist and co-founder of the Center for Economic and Research Policy. He's the author of The End of Loser Liberalism, Making Markets Progressive, and the co-author of Getting Back to Full Employment, A Better Bargain for Working People. Dean Baker, thank you for joining us. My first question, is this inflation that the U.S. is facing?
Well, first, thanks a lot for having me on. Your question, is it inflation? Absolutely. I mean, inflation means rising prices. And the latest data, if we take what's happened last year, October of 2020 to October 2021, our main measure of inflation, the consumer price index, has gone up 6.2%. So what that means specifically, this is a basket of goods and services. So we're averaging rent and car prices and bread prices and milk and gas and everything else in the world. And on average, that's gone up 6.2%. That's inflation. I can't argue that. The context that's often missing is that this is going on everywhere. When I'm saying everywhere, I mean other wealthy countries. So we've had a huge political debate here where you have a lot of people, obviously, particularly the Republicans, who want to blame Joe Biden and the Democrats. And the reality is, well, you want to do that, but we've had comparable inflation in Spain and the United Kingdom and Germany. Is that all Joe Biden's fault? I mean, I think that gets kind of stretched the imagination. The more obvious explanation here is that we had the economy largely shut down, as were theirs, and we're reopening. And the idea that we could have this massive reopening without some serious disruptions to the economy would have been wonderful, but that's also pretty far-fetched. So yes, we're seeing inflation. No, it's not the disaster that it's often being portrayed as.
Are there specific sectors that are driving inflation? I've seen news reports suggesting that obviously gas prices rising seem to be, you know, one of the reasons for this. And I know things like the auto market, you know, used cars in particular seem to be driving a lot of these price increases.
There are particular sectors that are really big trouble areas. This is part of the reason why many of us don't see the inflation as an ongoing enduring problem. So you mentioned oil. Well, if you remember when the economy shut down, oil prices literally went through the floor. They were negative. If you would agree to take delivery of oil, I think it was back in May or June of 2020, you would get paid. They would pay you to take delivery of oil. And that's because we had so much oil and so little demand that oil companies didn't know what to do with it. So if you would have agreed to take a barrel of oil, I forget what it was, they'd have given you $10 or whatever it was. It was actually a negative price. So it was inevitable that oil prices would go back up. They're somewhat above the pre-pandemic level, but not hugely. I mean, oil prices did rise to $86 a barrel back last month. They're down to around 70 or so. I don't know the exact number today, but somewhere around 70 a barrel. That's somewhat above the pre-pandemic level, but not hugely so. But that's exactly the sort of thing that we expect to see with the recovery, that as the U.S., not just the U.S., but U.S., Europe, Japan, China, they all start increasing. People are driving more. We're getting closer to normal. That increases the demand for oil. So if we look, we compare prices today, gas prices in particular, to where they were a year ago, they're about 40% higher. That's because the economy is more or less back to normal. So oil's not real cheap anymore. Cars, you had mentioned, again, we know exactly the problem. There was a fire at a huge semiconductor factory in Japan earlier in the year, which has hugely reduced the world supply of semiconductors, which are needed in cars. So most of the major manufacturers, I should say all the major manufacturers, had to cut back their production significantly, creating a real shortage of cars. New car prices are up about 10% over the last year. Used car prices about 27-28%. That's had a huge impact in our measures of inflation. That's added about 1.5 percentage points to the measure of inflation over this period. So you could point to some things like that that have had a real outsized impact. And those are going to end in the sense that oil prices, as I said, they've already fallen about 20% from their peaks. And car prices, the major manufacturers, Ford and Toyota, say they're already back at capacity. I presume the others will be fairly soon. So car prices are likely to come back down, and used car prices in particular. So that's the story why I and many others believe that this burst of inflation is a temporary story associated with the reopening of the economy, and it will come down. I mean, I don't expect it to be negative, but, you know, we will see much, much lower inflation in the coming year.
On oil prices, what's the possibility that they'll actually kind of self-correct? Because what you're suggesting is that the reason why oil prices, and actually specifically the price of a gallon of gas at the pump, has gone up is because there's just more demand for it. And I guess we've learned a lesson from the pandemic that as demand drops, the price will drop. So consumers respond to the rising oil prices by choosing, for instance, more fuel efficiency vehicles, which of course, the possibility of tax credits or other economic incentives to deal with issues like, you know, carbon emissions and climate change. Is there a lesson to be learned here?
Yeah, well, there's both a short-term story and a long-term story. So I think the short-term story, because not everyone's going to trade in their car for a more fuel-efficient car or an electric vehicle, you know, that's not something that happens overnight. But what is more likely to happen in the near future, which is mixed benefit, we are seeing more oil production. So when you get higher oil prices, a lot of the producers that went offline, so here I'm thinking of a lot of fracking producers in, say, Texas and North Dakota, a lot of those went offline during the pandemic because the price was so low. They're going to start again, and they could increase their production pretty quickly. That's not a great story if we're concerned about global warming, but if you want to see the price come down, that will do that. And I think we are seeing that to some extent now. The other story, which is a longer-term story and a hugely important one, it really, obviously, the future of the planet rests on, is that we move away from oil as a fuel. And this is about getting people into both more fuel-efficient cars, insofar as they're still, you know, traditional internal combustion engines, but also, more importantly, into electric vehicles. And we're clearly going that way, not nearly fast enough, but the credits that are in the infrastructure bill, and we'll see what we get in the Build Back Better bill, assuming there is one, but that will encourage people to switch to electric cars, and that will reduce demand for oil, will reduce the price, but we'll care less. I mean, if we're all driving electric cars, we aren't going to care much about the price of gas. But again, that's not a this year, next year story. That's maybe a 10, 15 years out story.
Now, I know the conservative critique about what's driving inflation. My understanding is there's kind of two foundational arguments. One, that it's tied to government spending, so this increase in spending since the election inauguration of President Biden. And the other is worker wages going up as a result of labor shortages. Let's take the first one first. How valid is that critique that as government spending goes up, there's an expectation for inflation?
Well, the issue with government spending is that it boosts the economy, boosts demand in the economy. And there's no doubt that Biden's package, and give credit or blame, the packages passed in 2020 when Trump was still in the White House, those added to demand in the economy. And to my view, that's really kind of a great story, because here it is where the economy largely shut down last year in the spring. And now we're looking at 4.2% unemployment. That's a really low unemployment rate. I mean, when that number came out last Friday, I was like, wow, that's really good news. The Black unemployment rate's the lowest it had been since 2018 and before that ever. So, you know, getting the economy back to something pretty close to normal in the span of a year and a half or even a little less, that's a really, really good story. No doubt that spending helped to do that. And in doing so, yeah, it undoubtedly had some impact on inflation. But this is why I bring up the point about other countries. We see comparable rates of inflation, not necessarily as high, but pretty comparable in Germany, in Spain, in the United Kingdom. So I don't think we could blame that on Joe Biden's recovery package. So basically what I'd say is we were going to have serious problems. There was going to be some inflationary issues associated with the reopening of the economy regardless. I'm sure those were made somewhat worse by the fact that we did it so rapidly and we got people back to work. Again, in my view, a great thing, but a cost of that was somewhat higher inflation.
And then what about the question about labor shortage? I mean, we're in kind of an odd era at this point where it seems like there's a lot more jobs than there are workers, and definitely in certain sectors, that's more true than others. But the expectation has always been that as the labor market tightens, wages are going to go up. And then as wages go up, isn't there a natural expectation that prices will go up?
Yeah, there are two things on that. First off, I think we could very clearly say that the inflation we're seeing is not wage pushed. And the reason why I say that is we have data on what's happened with profits, and the profit share of income has actually risen sharply in 2021. So you're pretty hard pressed to say that wages are the factor driving inflation if profits, businesses are actually increasing their share of the pie. Clearly, that's not the immediate factor. Wages aren't the immediate factor pushing up prices. Doesn't mean that might not be the case at some point in the future. That has not been the case in 2021. The issue of the labor shortage here too, I think it's overwhelmingly a positive story. This is primarily at the bottom end. So these are workers who are working in restaurants, in hotels, low paying occupations, and they're getting many cases first time in their life, really first time since the 60s, early 70s, that these workers actually have serious bargaining power. They have their choice of jobs. So they could say if they're getting paid too low or they're being treated poorly on the job, their boss is a jerk, they could say, okay, I'm out of here. I'm going across the street. Someone else wants to hire me. And I think that's a great thing. And what I'm hoping is that that will be to some extent enduring. In other words, if you have bosses that are jerks, they can't keep their workers. So either the bosses get fired or the business goes out of business. But that is, we are seeing high wage increases at the bottom end. Restaurant workers, the pay for workers in restaurants has risen 12.4% over the last year. So they're doing really well. Convenience stores, it's 20%. So we have the lowest paying jobs. You've seen the sharpest increase in wages. You go up higher on the wage ladder, that's much less true. And a lot of workers who are, say, earning 60, 70, 80,000 a year, they might be falling a little bit behind. I mean, not that that's a good story, but I'm less concerned about someone who's earning 80,000 a year falling 1 or 2% behind than, say, someone who was earning the minimum wage falling 1 or 2% behind. So to my view, that's overwhelmingly a positive story. And I expect it to be self-correcting in the sense that as you have businesses competing for workers, some will win, some will lose. The ones that lose go out of business. So where you have a lot of, particularly I'm looking at things like restaurants, small retail stores, you hear many of them say truthfully, oh, I can't afford to pay my workers, you know, another 10%, another 15%. Well, then they go, I mean, that's not a happy story, but that's the way capitalism works. If you can't pay the market wage, you're going to go out of business, and that will give us a more orderly labor market. Again, I hope it's always the case that, you know, workers even at the bottom have some choice, more so than they did during the pandemic. But I don't expect us to see the sort of jumping around workers quitting their jobs as frequently and as many jobs going unfilled as you have today. I don't expect to see that story, say, 6 months or a year down the road.
Dean, the American consumers and certainly the political class really view inflation as this evil that needs to be avoided in a way that sometimes may not serve the interests of economic growth or the interest of wages. Are Americans a little bit too obsessed with inflation and sort of the history of that inflation, harkening back to the late 70s and the Carter administration seems to be, you know, the argument?
Well, there's a tough sort of chicken and egg thing. So yes, I think people are overly concerned about inflation. But I think a lot of this is driven by the media. And what I mean by this is I don't think most people are sitting down thinking, oh, my God, how big a problem is inflation? Would we be better off with less employment and lower inflation? Or is it really good? I'm not knocking people, but people have day jobs. You know, they have families. So they're not doing that. I think when they have fears about inflation, it's because they turned on the news for a few minutes. Maybe they read an article in the paper and they saw, oh, inflation, you know, people are concerned inflation's rising. I think it's largely a media driven story. And, you know, again, I've had people say, oh, well, the media is not telling them that the price of gas rose. And of course, that's right. But the point I always make on this is, if we think of what we do over the course of a day, you know, we buy gas, we, you know, go to a restaurant, we see our friends, this and that. We do all these different things over the course of the day. And maybe we notice the price of gas went up 5 cents. Not happy about it, but you don't think twice. But then if you hear on the news, oh, price of gas went up, well, that sticks in your head. So I think the media really plays an enormous role in hyping inflation. So I don't think it's that people have sat down and really thought about and said, oh, inflation's this really horrible problem. I think it's a problem that, to a substantial extent, has really been perpetuated by the way it's been reported.
You're listening to Scholar Circle, scholarcircle.org. We're discussing the U.S. rate of inflation and economic recovery with Dean Baker of the Center for Economic and Research Policy. I know you've written about the infamous CNN story about the rising milk prices. I mean, is the media certainly overhyping the story about inflation? Are they actually reporting higher rates of inflation than what's really going on?
Yes, they are. I mean, I saw that milk, CNN famous milk story, and it was close to absurd. First off, they talked to this family how much more they're paying in milk. None of us know how much this family is paying in milk. We don't know them. We don't know what their story was. What we do know is what happened to the price of milk over the last year. It went up 4%. Not trivial, but really not that big a deal. There's a lot of years you could point to the price of milk going up by more than 4%. Then they had this family consuming a huge amount of milk, 12 gallons of milk a week. Maybe they do. I have no idea. But, you know, that's an unusual family, if that's the case. So presumably you want a family that's more typical that you're presenting to the public. Then on top of that, they didn't talk about what was going on with their wages. They're presented as moderate income people. Well, they probably have had big pay increases if they're moderate income people. So almost certainly their pay increases hugely outweigh what the additional money they have to pay for milk and other items. And then on top of that, they presumably have kids. If they're drinking 12 gallons of milk a week, they're getting the expanded child tax credit. So rather than suffering from a hardship, this family almost certainly is doing pretty well. Again, none of us know the specifics of this family, but a typical family in that position should be doing pretty well, where CNN presented as the exact opposite. I should mention the New York Times, and I pick on the New York Times because I think of them as the best. They did the exact same thing with gas. They had someone who just used an incredible amount of gas, if we take them at face value, and said they had to work 15 hours extra a week to cover the higher cost of gas. And, you know, if you back that out, they'd be buying something like 200 gallons of gas a week. And, you know, I have no idea how much gas this guy buys, but that's clearly not typical.
Absolutely. When considering the supply chain issues, and this came up in our conversation last week, we know that consumers have been buying a lot more goods, in part because the pandemic has shut down a number of the service industries. So we all have this money that we used to pay on for services that we, you know, that we can't go out and do. So we're buying goods. Is that tied at all, you know, to then the rising inflation? Are those really two different issues?
No, that's a big chunk of that. And again, we could see the picture pretty clearly here. So we saw a huge increase in demand for goods beginning in the spring, continuing to the summer, both because people had more money, we had the pandemic checks, but it was also the case, as you said, people aren't going to restaurants, they're not taking vacations, they're not spending money on services that they would ordinarily be spending. So that led to this huge increase in demand for goods. At the same time, we also see that the supply chain, first off, you know, we had a lot of issues, our ports not being up to snuff. You know, we really neglected modernizing them as part of the infrastructure package. It is supposed to modernize them, but we hadn't done that. And also a real shortage of workers in key areas, particularly trucking. Again, that's results from trucking companies not paying enough. So people don't want to work in trucking. So that led to this huge supply chain issue, which has contributed a lot to higher prices. The positive side, again, why I'm optimistic about the future on inflation, is that we are getting through them. Some of them, you know, we're hearing about measures that the Biden administration has been working with the ports to try to speed the rate at which items go through. But probably the more important factor is that it's going to be self-limiting. So people who bought a car, bought a new television set, bought a new refrigerator, all these kind of big ticket items, if you did that in the spring or summer, you're probably not going to be doing that again this winter. So we're going to see, and we are seeing, a fall off in demand for goods, a lot of these goods. And of course, also people are going back to restaurants, and we're spending more in restaurants now than we did before the pandemic. People are flying more. We're almost back to pre-pandemic rates of air travel. So we are seeing the shift back to a more normal economy, and that's going to lessen. I don't know if it's going to eliminate. I don't know how long it'll take us to get through all the backlog with supply chains, but it's definitely lessening the problem. And we're already seeing that, the benefits of that. I've been following television sets. We'll see what happens to the price of television sets tomorrow when the new consumer price index comes out. But television prices had risen rapidly at 9.8% from March to August, which is like a 25% annual rate. That's a really big deal. They've fallen since then, the last 2 months, 2.8%. We'll see what happens to the November data, but that suggests that the backlog that was created with all people buying television sets, we've gotten through that and prices are now falling. We'll see if they go back to where they were before the pandemic. My guess is they probably will. I mean, next month, but sometime in 2022. So I think we are getting through this big backlog. And when we do that, that's going to mean prices of a lot of goods, not just will they stop rising, but they're actually going to fall.
Another market that just seems to be remarkably inflated, we're really talking about bubbles here, is real estate. I guess first, is this tied to the same sorts of issues that we've been talking about? Is there something else going on? I'm worried when I see just, you know, how big this bubble is in real estate. Last time we saw a bubble like this, we ended up seeing it bursting pretty hard in 2008.
There's two different stories going on with real estate. One is that we see very low mortgage rates. So the mortgage rates fell at the start of the pandemic. They've been around 4.1, 4.2% if you go back to February of 2020. And they got it down as low as around 3%. And they're currently, I'd have to double check, but somewhere around 3.2 today. So it's a very low mortgage rate. So when you could get very low mortgage rates, it tends to put upward pressure on prices. So that's part of the story of the increase in house prices. The other part is a more interesting and you know, I think likely enduring one is that we've seen increased opportunities for working from home. Now, some of that is just pandemic and will go away, but I think much of that will be enduring. In other words, people are going to be able to work from home, if not completely, maybe 3 days a week, 4 days a week, show up at the office once a week or something, which means you don't have to live close to your work. And what we've seen with house prices is the biggest increase in house prices has been in smaller cities, in some cases towns. And in a lot of the high-priced areas, places like New York, Boston, Washington, D.C., San Francisco, prices have been fairly weak, in some cases actually falling. So that's a relocation story, as I say. I think that's overwhelmingly positive. Will that be enduring? My guess is it probably will. I don't mean prices won't fall. What I always say to people is, if suppose the mortgage rates go back up to 4.1, 4.2, which is still low by historic standards. So I'm not predicting mortgage rates will go through the roof, but it wouldn't surprise me at all if we're talking a year or 2 years from now, the mortgage rates are somewhat higher than they are today. That probably will put somewhat downward pressure in prices. But this price increase, unlike the 2.7, the price increase in the first part of the zeros, this is driven by the fundamentals of the market. People are willing to spend more on a house, both, you know, the interest rate part of the story. But the other thing is, if you're working from home, you need more space. And also you're spending less on commuting. So you don't have to spend so much money driving or taking a train or whatever might be into your work. You don't need to. You have work-related expenses, like maybe you buy lunch at work. You have to have your clothes dry cleaned. I mean, there's all these expenses associated with going into an office that you don't have if you could work from home. So I do think that the rise in prices is likely enduring. And again, I'd say mostly a good thing, because, you know, many of us had seen this story where a lot of people are priced out of the markets in places like New York and San Francisco. That's not going to end overnight. But insofar as we see somewhat downward pressure on the prices in those places, and instead smaller cities or places like Detroit that had been losing population, if instead those turn around and actually become places that, you know, have more vibrant economies, that's a great thing.
Interest rates, it seems as though that the institutions, like, you know, for instance, you know, the Federal Reserve is not responding to this inflation in a way that suggests that they think it's long term. I mean, is it fair to say that the financial institutions are indicating they think this is going to be a short-term inflation rather than something long-term?
Yeah, very much. And it's something, you know, I've often been skeptical of the wisdom of financial markets because I was warning about the stock bubble in the 90s and then the housing bubble in the zeros. So I realized financial markets very much can be wrong. But if you look at the interest rate on 10-year treasury bonds, last I looked, it was about 1.5%. There's no way on earth people are holding a 10-year treasury bond at 1.5% if they think we're going to see 5 or 6% inflation for the next 3, 4, 5 years. That makes zero sense. So they're betting that this inflation is very much temporary. That's, of course, the explicit view of the Federal Reserve Board. Jerome Powell, the chair, has said that repeatedly. So his expectation, at least what he says, is that we're going to see much lower inflation in the year ahead. And again, I agree with that. I think that's right. But it mirrors more what he thinks than what I think.
We know that opinion polls and, you know, perceptions, you know, things like, you know, consumer confidence are all suggesting that Americans are pretty concerned about inflation, concerned about the economic position of the country, and definitely concerned with the leadership coming from the White House. What you're indicating is maybe they shouldn't be so concerned, and this isn't as much of a threat as what's being reported. So what should the White House do, or what should, generally speaking, you know, what should economists do to try to break through and indicate that maybe you shouldn't be as worried as you are?
You know, we just have to, I think, keep reporting the data. And the Times, New York Times, a very interesting piece a couple of days ago, it was Monday or Tuesday this week, where they had data from JP Morgan, which is obviously a huge bank, and they have credit cards. So they know people's bank accounts. They know how much is in their bank accounts. And what this piece reported was how much money people have in their bank accounts relative to what they had before the pandemic, when the pandemic started. And all groups, so they did this by income quintile, all income quintiles had considerably more in their account today than they did when the pandemic started. But the biggest increase were for those at the bottom. This is percentage increase, just to be clear. So a $1,000 increase in your bank account for someone in the bottom quintile that pours 20%, that's a large percentage increase, but it's obviously not all that much money. But, you know, but in any case, the point just being here that most people have much more money in their bank accounts than they did at the start of this. But yet there was another survey I saw not long ago. They asked people if they're not going to do Christmas shopping or holiday shopping, or at least less than they would ordinarily. And a substantial percent, let's say it was 20%, said they were going to either not do holiday shopping at all or substantially less. So you look at that and you go, okay, we know almost everyone, particularly those who are most stretched, they have more money in the bank today than they would ordinarily, but now they're saying they're going to do less shopping. So somehow they've got it in their head, or maybe they're just telling the survey taker that things are really bad for them when the data seem to indicate that they're not, that they're actually better off than they were, which again, I understand. Someone's in the bottom 20th percentile, they're not doing great, but they are doing better than they were pre-pandemic. In terms of, you know, what the administration could do, what I and other economists could do, I think just trying to talk realistically about the data. I mean, we were talking earlier about the job situation. I'd have to imagine that, you know, people working in restaurants, custodians, you know, people at these bottom end jobs that have the option to quit, that must feel great to them. And, you know, I think talking about that would be a great thing because, you know, here it is, you have people saying how horrible the economy is. You have all these people, a lot of them hate their jobs. They really hate their jobs. They're unpleasant jobs. They had a boss who was a jerk. And now they could just say, well, I'm going across the street and there's someone offering me more money and they seem like a better boss. That has to be great. You know, and I think it's really important to talk about that because that is something that, you know, the Biden administration could rightly take credit for that.
And of course, if you want to get a raise at your current job, the best way to do that is get a better offer someplace else. And then even if you like your current job, that you can, you know, ask them to offer to match it. And
yeah, exactly.
Frequently, that's actually the only way. Yeah.
No, exactly. You know, these workers at the bottom have bargaining power that, again, we haven't seen for many decades.
So the story is that inflation is real, but perhaps is not as permanent as what's being suggested. And even more importantly, I think the story is that we need to delve much more deeply into these numbers, much more deeply into these narratives to get a better picture than certainly what a number of the media sources have been presenting to us. So thank you very much. We've been discussing inflation and the economic recovery here in the United States. Our guest has been Dean Baker,
senior economist and co-founder of the Center for Economic and Research Policy. He's the author of The End of Loser Liberalism, Making Markets Progressive, and co-author of Getting Back to Full Employment, A Better Bargain for Working People. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks a lot for having me on.